Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the BRC's Trade Policy Podcast. I'm William Madison. This time, the UK and the EU negotiations have restarted. Is it full steam ahead for a deal being done next month? What can we expect to be within any agreements and what won't there be? And what happened in this week's meeting of the Joint Committee on Implementing the Protocol in Northern Ireland from January? Real progress? That's with a question mark. As usual, I'm joined by William Bain, BRC's trade expert. William, how are you going?
Hello, very well, thanks.
And also joined by Aidan Connolly, the director of the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium. Aidan, how are you?
I am socially isolating. It's got nothing to do with COVID, I'm just antisocial.
I'm the same. So, William, the phrase we've heard a lot over the last week about negotiations is the ball is in your court repeatedly from both sides. So what happened at last week's European Council summit, which led to the suspension of the talks?
Well, I mean, this is the won't they part of the story, the will they won't they story that's gripped us all over the last few weeks. So, yes, at the Council summit, the heads of government adopted some conclusions and they seemed relatively fine. You know, they talked about continuing the talks, you know, getting a deal done. But the UK government took umbrage at a couple of things. I mean, firstly, it wanted the word intensify, and the absence of that really seemed to irk the UK's chief negotiator, Lord Frost, and the Prime Minister. And secondly, they wanted to see negotiations conducted on the basis of text. I mean, you know, what we've seen so far has been a bit like one of those sort of dramas from the Cold War where people sit with files on, you know, different sides of a desk, but they're not actually discussing what could be a final communique or the final text that could be generated. So that has changed. I mean, as a result of Michel Barnier's statement in the European Parliament yesterday, the number 10 statement last night, we now do have the resumption of face-to-face talks. They're going to take place daily. There's going to be a secretariat to put together any closed chapters. So that's chapters of the agreement like on trade in goods, etc., where both sides have agreed there's nothing more to be done. That is a closed chapter ready to go in any agreement. But fundamentally, I mean, whereas, you know, this has affected the process of the negotiations, it hasn't affected the overall dynamics, which are that the UK government is going to have to give way on issues like governance of the agreement. So where either side, you know, is seen to break the terms of the agreement, there should be some remedies, including tariffs, to be applied by the other side, even before it goes into the dispute resolution process within the agreement. So, you know, that sort of governance agenda has been beefed up by the EU after the disputes about the UK internal market bill. And also the UK is going to have to give way to an extent on things like state aid, you know, with common principles written down into the text. We'll see what they can come up with in terms of having a regulator to scrutinise any state aid done by this or future UK governments. And the big area where things are going to give way on the EU side is around fisheries. And that's where things could still be very tough because, you know, what happened at the ambassadors meeting prior to the European Council was that the member states were actually toughening up Michel Barnier's position. They made him toughen up what the EU is asking for in terms of fisheries access, seeking to link the issue to energy market access for the UK so that fisheries isn't the last dossier that's left on the table to be decided, because they think that would play into the UK's favour and the EU would get a comparatively bad deal on fisheries access. So we've seen some progress on the process. What we now need, with the clock ticking very loudly, is progress on the substance.
And William, really, can I just ask, for us to get a deal before Christmas, then, what you're telling me is that the UK chief negotiator can no longer be Frosty the Gnome-Man? Sorry.
You know, I was thinking this whole week has been rather like, you know, that other big Irish hit of the year, Normal People, which was the archetypal will they, won't they drama of the year before.
Very good. Very good.
Before Michelle and David's act over the last few weeks. So, you know, good news, but ultimately it comes down to the politics. This is not so much now about technical trade discussions. This is about politics. We know both sides want to do a deal. They want to do a deal really by the middle of November, if they possibly can, in order to get it ratified. But are they willing to will the means of doing a deal? Do they like the price tag that is tied to this deal? And that will come down to politics, and fundamentally will decide whether these negotiations are successful or not.
So as we speak, although not as the listener will hear this, but as we speak, talks are restarting this afternoon now on a daily basis. So what did the UK get out of the suspension of negotiations over the weekend?
Well, probably at the time the listener is listening to this, they probably will be going on, because I think we can expect the negotiations to go on at weekends. I think when you speak to officials, they've got the sense that they're going to be pretty much working 24/7 on this. The big difference here is that with the Article 50 process, you know, because it was quite an element of trust between the chief negotiators and their deputies, what we saw was basically the agreement being built brick by brick. So when we got into this equivalent phase 2 years ago with the withdrawal agreement, the backstop originally, the revised protocol last year, we already had about 90 to 95% of the agreement set in stone. With this agreement, nothing is confirmed until everything is confirmed. So we're talking about a 700 plus page trade agreement covering everything from tariffs to rules of origin to pharmaceuticals, which has really got to be put together from scratch over the next 4 to 5 weeks. And that is a huge task and will involve very, very long hours indeed. I think what the UK got out of this were some guarantees on the process. So it's moved it into negotiating on the basis of legal text. Now, the UK thinks that you can better resolve disputes when you can sort of discuss both sides' textual proposal and try and work out what an area of convergence would look like, how you get to a sort of an agreed joint text. And it thinks that that is a more efficient way to get things done and to get to an overall agreement. But I think the other aspect to this we've got to remember is a chapter isn't closed until both sides agree. So, you know, and in terms of closing chapters, it will feed into what the overall negotiating position is. So the officials might agree that they've got a very good deal on roads and haulage. But if the overall negotiators want to perhaps leverage that potential agreement against one of the other chapters on the level playing field, that particular chapter might not be closed just yet. And so that's a characteristic that we often see in such trade negotiations. So there's been a movement in terms of the process. We understand that, you know, the key concern, I think, on the EU side is now on fisheries. They're expecting to see some further movement from the UK on things like state aid and the level playing field and governance. So I think we can see some movement that will make the convergence between both sides much more apparent. But of course, the whole thing about the last week is it was entirely predictable, because as we say, much of this process is now political. If there is a deal around mid-November, both sides have to sell it to each other's constituencies. That's Tory backbenchers in terms of the Prime Minister, the member states in terms of Michel Barnier and Ursula von der Leyen. And having been seen to have fought very hard to get a triumphant deal, could be one way that it just manages to get ratification over the line a little bit easier.
And on the communications side, how have the UK government comms around no deal changed over the weekend?
Well, very much. I mean, we've seen TV and radio adverts and online ads saying, you know, time's running out, make sure you get on with it. I think there had been a sense that the communications were confusing. They seemed to imply that things were it was just a box ticking exercise, and you could do it very quickly, but things were really just staying the same. I think these adverts are pointing out the fact that things are going to be very different, deal or no deal. So if there is a deal, it's still likely to be very thin. It will still mean customs declarations. It will still mean import VAT having to be accounted for. It will still mean, you know, new requirements on products of animal origin and certain tropical fruit imports and plant imports into Great Britain. So this is nothing like remaining in the single market and the customs union and the common VAT area. This is a radical rupture from that trading order. And I think the adverts now make that crystal clear in the way the first set really didn't.
So, Aidan, turning to you now, slightly better news from the Joint Committee this week in terms of details on implementing the protocol in Northern Ireland from January. Can you run through the statement and what was discussed?
Well, it's less a case of habemus papam, but more a case of habemus modus. We have had some movement. Great. It feels like it's been Groundhog Day for this past sort of few months where I've been coming on the podcast to say, oh, we're very concerned, but we've had no movement. Well, we have had some movement. And that movement has been on both sides. So one of the things has happened that the EU has now removed that need that it had to have an office in Belfast. And what it's asked for is to have EU people supervising some of the transactions that are going on, those customs and those single market regulatory transactions that will be happening. It looks like the UK may move on that. The other thing that has happened that is good news as far as the building the trust with the EU is that work has now, the contracts have been awarded to three firms to start the building from tomorrow. In one of the breaking ground things happened, and Monday for the other two, for the ports, for the checks that will have to happen in Northern Ireland. Now, that was a big thing because both the DUP did not want it to happen and were against it. And secondly, the lack of movement in this past 10 months has been one of those big symbolic stopping points for the EU to have more trust, because those checks to fulfil the obligations under the Northern Ireland Protocol would need to happen on Northern Ireland soil and would need somewhere for that to happen. So that is starting. So as far as the readout from the UK is concerned, you know, the committee has taken on a stock take of the specialised committee activity since the last meeting. And there was an update on the implementation with a particular focus on Northern Ireland Protocol and citizens' rights. This is a lot more of a positive statement by both sides than we've seen in this past while. And I think the fact that the European Union is prepared to drop us request in return for us installing 15 customs and veterinary staff in the north, in Northern Ireland's ports, is seen as a big movement. Michael Gove himself has previously been critical of the EU having a Belfast office. He said that the idea was a mini embassy and insisted it was not necessary. But there is that sufficient and proportional oversight that the EU have been seeking. An unnamed official on the committee has gone as far as to say the new ideas on the protocol were a turning point in the strained relationship between London and Brussels on that contentious issue and on other contentious issues as well. However, the UK's controversial internal market bill that would override part of the withdrawal agreements is still a problem for both sides. What Vice President Sefcovic has said is that he hopes and expects the very controversial parts of the internal market bill will be withdrawn. That's those clauses 42 to 47, which, you know, have, even though, as the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland said, they are in a very specific and limited way, they do break international law. Depending on who you ask, of course, other people think it's absolutely right and that it's all part of sovereignty, sovereignty, sovereignty. I think the main thing for us to remember in all this is that there's still a long way to go. There are still over 80 questions that need answered by the Northern Ireland, or by the Joint Committee and by the EU and the UK on how business will trade in January. It's 10 weeks to get things like the Trader Support Service, the RAMS, that's the Retail Assured Movement System, or Retail Movement System, depending on who you ask. That's that auditable and certified supply chain that I keep talking about. And you know, usually these things would be done over the space of a couple of years. We're talking that between CDS, the TSS, the GVMS, and several other acronyms, you're talking that there are five or six rather bulky but hugely important IT projects that need to be wheeled out in 10 weeks. We're already seeing that some retailers are having fits and heart attacks, would be a good way of saying it, as we would say here in Northern Ireland, about whether or not they're going to be ready in time. I think, as I usually end and my bit with, I'll say that it's time is ticking and it's very short.
So we know that supermarket retailers have identified some problems on food supply chains. Are these any nearer to being resolved? Are there any solutions that are on the horizon?
Well, that is that retailer assured movement system, or RAMS, that we've been talking about there now. I think it has been on the table. It was first put forward by HMG in sort of end of June, start of July time. There was a lot of movement. Then there was not movement after the internal market bill came out. We're back now to having movement again. And I think it's we need to know what the parameters of that are going to be. We need to know who is going to be within that system. We also need to know what it actually does. Now, we need to be building a sort of realistic framework here that allows us to deliver and keep choice and affordability for Northern Ireland consumers. But we also need to be realistic in the expectations for this. There is no good SPS or good customs fairy that is going to come down and wave a magic wand and have a scheme that removes all friction. There are going to be frictions. And I was asked on the Sunday Politics last week, was I hinting that prices would go up? And my answer was, nope. I'm saying that it's certain that prices will go up. Even if we get these major derogations and major mitigations in place, there are still going to be questions about freshness, about delays, about costs, and even the non-tariff barriers that will be there will have significant impact on the bottom line, not just for retailers, because you've got to remember we're high volume, low profit margin, but also that end price for the Northern Ireland consumer. And because they have half the discretionary income of Great British households, they can't afford it either.
So finally, William, the UK Board of Trade met this week, replete with its new advisors. The strategic reconstituted... The reconstituted Strategic Trade Advisory Group, that's a bit of a mouthful, met last week. Can we expect the UK's longer-term trade policy to become clearer with these new structures in place?
Well, this is the big question. And, you know, it is fine to engage former prime ministers from across the world, although some are more controversial than others, of course. But fundamentally, what the UK government has to decide for the long term is, what is its trade policy going to be based upon? You know, is it going to be a policy that's based on cheaper imports and reducing tariffs and taking a kind of global lead on tariff reductions? It doesn't look as if it's embracing the kind of tariff liberalisations that some who supported Brexit wanted to see. Dare I say, a more New Zealand-style Brexit with tariffs being cut unilaterally down to near zero. It doesn't appear to be following that kind of model for future tariff policy, but wants to do bilateral trade deals. But if you sort of look at a lot of non-food products, there's not a lot of scope for tariff reduction really through FTAs. I mean, you know, we'd be looking at sort of China as a source of a lot of our non-food imports, but of course, very controversial geopolitically in terms of doing a trade arrangement with China. So in that sense, the UK has to decide, what is this economic model going to be for the future? And where does trade policy fit within that? Does it want to be primarily a country that's comfortable with its current rate and proportion of imports? Or does it want to be a country that embarks upon export-led growth and wants to boost its manufacturing and productive sectors, making goods that other countries can buy? The other issue I think that's to be resolved is to what extent DIT's ambition that the UK is at the sort of hub of a global series of trade agreements can be realised either by what emerges from the UK-EU discussions or from the reality of trade agreements elsewhere, which is they take years to do. And the best agreements are ones which are not done at frantic pace, but which are done through a considered acknowledgement of one's offensive and defensive interests. And that's why there's not likely to be an agreement with the US until well into next year, dependent, of course, on what happens in the election on the 3rd of November. And even negotiations with Australia and New Zealand may take a little bit longer than DIT has perhaps reckoned for. So lots of thought has to go into what the short term, how the short term catching up with all of the EU exit elements ties in with what the longer term approach on trade policy is. And clarity is somewhat short on that issue at this stage.
Every time someone calls it an Australia type deal, I'm calling it an Afghanistan or Islamic Republic of Mauritania style deal because it's about the same.
And on that note, we'll leave discussions for today. So thank you both for joining us today. Thanks, William.
Thank you. Pleasure as always.
And thank you to you too, Aidan.
Thank you, Williams.
So the UK-EU relationship is all set to be resolved in the next 5 weeks, one way or another. We'll keep you up to date with the latest. If you want to learn more, you can go to www.brc.org.uk/Brexit. Until next time, goodbye from us.